Glory had come out onto the platform at the rear of the car to rest her hand on the railing and watch them walk away.
Is she always like that?
You mean like a whore trying to drum up business? If you ever quote me on that, I'll deny it up one way and down the other. I'm just like everybody else. Nobody wants to offend Edward Sheffield, so nobody ever mentions that he married himself a real she-devil.
He has to notice the way she acts.
I reckon he does, but he chooses to ignore it, and that's his right. For what it's worth, I've never heard any gossip about Mrs. Sheffield actually doing anything with other men except flirting. But she goes about that mighty serious-like.
She's a very beautiful woman.
No doubt about that. She could make herself some good money if she wanted to come to work in a place like mine.
She's not Sheffield's first wife, is she?
No. His first wife died about a year and a half ago, I reckon. He married the current Mrs. Sheffield 6 months after that.
Where did he find her? Some cat house somewhere?
That's not the way I heard it at all. She's the daughter of some politician. Mr. Sheffield travels in pretty high circles, you know. It could be that the marriage was some sort of business arrangement. Those fellas like to take care of each other, just like the old kings and queens did in Europe. If that's the case, then I'd say Mr. Sheffield got the better end of the deal. Mrs. Sheffield's one of the prettiest women I've ever seen.
Gloriana Sheffield was beautiful, all right, thought Morgan. But she couldn't compare to Rebel. No woman could.
You're going to take the job Mr. Sheffield offered you, aren't you, Morgan?
Does it matter to you whether I do or not?
Of course it does. I'm the one who suggested that Mr. Sheffield talk to you. He wants to hire you, and he's a man who gets what he wants. If he doesn't, he's liable to be upset with me, too.
I'm not going to accept this offer just to keep you on his good side.
You'd better think about that, Morgan. I have friends in this town, too.
I'll make up my mind when we get to Titusville and I've had a chance to look around. I'm not sure I want to go up against this Colonel Black. He's got a small army of gunmen working for him. He must be a dangerous man.
That's why you need to take Mr. Sheffield's offer. He'll give you a small army, too.
And that was the problem. Morgan didn't want an army. He just wanted Colonel Gideon Black in his gun sights. Augustine left Morgan at the saloon, and he walked on to the Bisbee house. A different clerk had come on duty, but the man paid no attention to Morgan. The dark suit made him look respectable enough that he wasn't out of place. He went upstairs, undressed, and turned in for the night. This day, he thought, had been 1,000 years long. Despite his weariness, he didn't fall asleep instantly, as he thought he might. Instead, images played through his mind, some of them tragic and grisly. The fate suffered by Sean, Franny, and Cyrus Williams, along with their ranch hands. And some of them unaccountably intriguing, such as Gloriana Sheffield. Morgan wasn't interested in her as a woman, but he was human enough to know that she was incredibly attractive. He responded to her beauty as any man would, just not to the same degree that most men would experience if they spent much time around Glory. He was still in mourning for everything that he had lost. Even if he hadn't been, Glory would have been off limits to him. Conrad Browning had been a pretty sorry son of a bitch at times, but even then, he hadn't been the sort to go after another man's wife. No, he didn't have any romantic interest in her, Morgan thought. But he had to admit that she was a strong personality, the sort that you didn't forget. Even though he was sure they didn't mean it the same way, he was looking forward to getting acquainted with her, too. With that thought in his head, Kid Morgan finally dozed off. After breakfast the next morning in the hotel dining room, Morgan settled up his bill and then led the buckskin down to the train station. It was early, not quite 7 o'clock. The train for Titusville with Edward Sheffield's private cars coupled to it wouldn't be rolling out for more than an hour, but Morgan wanted to be sure he could make arrangements to take his horse with him. The conductor assured him that wouldn't be a problem.
Mr. Sheffield told us that you'd be traveling up to the mines with him today, Mr. Morgan. He didn't say anything about you taking a horse with you, but he asked us to accommodate anything you asked for as long as it doesn't throw us off schedule. Well, we got a boxcar filled out with stalls for livestock. You can put that buckskin of yours in any of them.
I'm obliged to you. Have you hooked on to Mr. Sheffield's cars yet?
No, we'll do that just before we pull out. Mr. Sheffield's up and about, though. I just saw him a little while ago talking to the station master.
Morgan nodded again and then led his horse over to the train. Some of the porters moved a ramp into place so that he could load the buckskin into the boxcar fitted out with stalls. Once that was done, he walked toward the siding where Sheffield's private cars were parked. Activity around the depot had picked up as the hour approached the time when the train would leave, Bags were being placed into the baggage car, and passengers were beginning to congregate on the platform. Some of them were miners who were returning to Titusville and the Gloriana mine after having a few days off in Bisbee. Morgan climbed the iron steps to the platform at the rear of the car, where he had met with Sheffield the night before. He knocked on the door, expecting the maid to open it. Instead, it was Glory Sheffield who stood there when the door swung back. She wore a dark green silk robe that was belted tightly around her trim waist. The robe was open just enough at the top to give a hint of the shadowed cleft between her breasts. Her thick red hair was loose around her shoulders. She smiled a greeting as she stepped onto the platform.
Mr. Morgan, right on time. Actually, I think you're a little early.
She put a hand on the breast of her robe.
You'll have to pardon me for not being dressed yet.
Just wanted to let your husband know that I'm here, ma'am, and ready to go.
You don't care that I know you're here?
No offense, Mrs. Sheffield, but I'm not doing business with you.
You could be, you know.
No, ma'am. I don't think so.
I meant if Edward would give me some more responsibility, I could handle some of his affairs for him.
I suppose he does what he thinks is best.
Come inside. I'll tell my husband that you're here.
Morgan nodded. But before either of them could move...
Don't you move!
A man stepped around the end of the car.
Die!
He swung up a shotgun. Morgan's instincts took over, allowing him to react in less than the blink of an eye. The attacker fell to the side and lay still. Morgan turned to look at Glory and saw that she must have dove back into the vestibule as soon as she saw the shotgun. She didn't seem to be hurt.
Are you all right?
Glory looked at him, blinking, seemingly half stunned by the sudden and unexpected outbreak of violence.
No. No, I'm all right.
The door at the far end of the car opened. Morgan looked past Glory and saw Edward Sheffield rushing toward them. Sheffield wasn't wearing his coat and tie, his suspenders were down, and his shirt collar was open. Bits of shaving soap clung to his cheeks, and he still held his razor in his hand. When he saw Morgan standing there, gun in hand, over Glory...
My God, Morgan, if you've hurt my wife...
Oh, stop it, Edward. Mr. Morgan just saved my life.
She raised a hand toward him.
If you'll just help me up, Mr. Morgan.
She recovered quickly from the shock of almost being shotgunned, Morgan thought. She was also making sure that he got a good view down that partially open robe.
I'm sure your husband would be glad to help you, ma'am.
He opened the Colt cylinder.
I need to replace that cartridge.
She glared at him as he thumbed a fresh round into the gun and snapped the cylinder closed again. Down on the ground, Watkins still hadn't moved. Morgan went down the steps to take a closer look. He kicked the shotgun aside and kept the Colt trained on Watkins as he circled the miner. Watkins was dead. The blood that came from his mouth formed a small pool beside his head. Morgan didn't feel any real regret over the killing. Any man who tried to blast him with a shotgun could expect the same thing. But he did have a bitter taste in his mouth for a moment at the sheer senselessness of it. The fight the night before had been over nothing but Watkins' injured pride, and now he was dead for the same reason. Sheffield had helped his wife to her feet, and both of them came onto the platform. Morgan noticed that Glory was holding her robe tightly closed at the throat.
That's a man you were brawling with in Augustine's place last night.
Yeah.
And now you've killed him.
When a man's pointing a shotgun at you, there's never enough time not to kill him.
I suppose not. Watkins' temper was always getting him into trouble. If he'd fired that shotgun, chances are that Mrs. Sheffield would have been wounded.
He probably would have killed me, along with Mr. Morgan. Mr. Morgan really did save my life, Edward.
Well, that's one reason for me to forgive him for killing one of my employees. And one more reason for you to accept my proposition and go to work for me, Morgan. You can replace Watkins on my payroll, but for a much higher salary, of course.
We'll talk about that later.
Morgan slid his gun back into his holster.
Once we get to Titusville.
All right.
Sheffield jerked his head toward the door of the railroad car.
Come on in. We'll be leaving soon.
Morgan went back up the steps and followed Sheffield and Glory into the car.
Welcome aboard.
Sheffield headed for the door at the far end of the car. Their living quarters were in the other car, and he needed to finish shaving and dressing. Glory turned her head to smile at Morgan.
Yes, welcome aboard.
Somehow, it sounded completely different when she said it. The train pulled out of Bisbee right on schedule. It had backed onto the siding so that Sheffield's private cars could be coupled behind the caboose. Then it rolled through a big curve, leaving the Southern Pacific tracks behind and heading north on the rails of the spur line owned by Sheffield. Once they were out of the Mule Mountains around the settlement, the tracks followed the broad, flat valley of the San Pedro River. Because of the river, the mostly arid landscape to be found elsewhere in that part of the territory was relieved by broad patches of grass and scrubby trees and brush. The splashes of green were welcome sights in the primarily brown and tan and gray vistas rolling past outside the windows of the sitting room in Edward Sheffield's private car. While Sheffield and Glory were in the other car, the German maid appeared and offered Morgan some coffee, asking him as well if he would like anything to eat.
Just the coffee, thanks.
She turned to leave.
Have you worked for Mr. Sheffield very long?
Ach, yes, I have taken care of Herr Sheffield und Frau Sheffield. The other Frau Sheffield.
That's right. I remember hearing something about Mr. Sheffield being married before.
Frau Sheffield was a lovely woman, but not well. Sick, you understand? Her heart.
That's a shame. At least Mr. Sheffield was able to find someone else.
Yeah, someone else. Are you going to work for Herr Sheffield?
I don't know yet. Maybe.
You be careful around that one. I did not say anything, you understand, but be careful.
With that, she turned and left the car. And when she came back a few minutes later with a cup of hot coffee, she didn't say anything else. Morgan sat in one of the armchairs and sipped the coffee as he looked through the windows. The Dragoon Mountains were already visible to the northeast, blue and gray on the horizon. They were bigger than the Mule Mountains, rugged peaks that contained valuable quantities of copper and silver and gold. The railroad tracks began another long, sweeping curve that would take the train into the mountains. Glory Sheffield came into the car. She wore a modestly cut, expensive dress again, but somehow on her, it didn't look all that modest. She had left her hair loose.
Good morning again, Mr. Morgan. I hope the rest of our trip is more pleasant and less dangerous than it started out.
I couldn't agree more.
She sat down in one of the overstuffed armchairs opposite him and demurely folded her hands in her lap.
I hope you'll agree to take Edward's offer, too. It would be nice having someone around who's closer to my own age.
If I take the job, I won't be around all that much. I'll be on the trail of those outlaws.
Well, I suppose that's true, but I'm sure we'd see each other some of the time.
Do you know anything about this Colonel Black your husband suspects is the leader of the bandits?
Morgan was surprised by the way Glory stiffened at the question, just enough for him to notice.
No, of course not. Why would I know anything about a bandit?
No reason. I just thought you might have heard Mr. Sheffield talking about him.
No, I don't know any more than you do. I'm sorry.
No need to be sorry. I was just curious.
Glory stood up.
Would you like something to eat? I can have Dorothea prepare some breakfast.
Already ate. Thanks.
Morgan held up the cup.
Coffee's fine.
All right. I'll see you later, Mr. Morgan.
She left without giving him her usual flirtatious smile, and Morgan couldn't help but wonder if his question about Colonel Black had caused her sudden shift in attitude. The only reason he could see that it would was if she had lied to him. And if she lied to him, then she really did know more about the renegade colonel than she was letting on. That was interesting, he thought. Morgan didn't know what it meant yet, or whether it would prove helpful to him, but it was definitely interesting. Sheffield came into the car a short time later, smelling of bay rum from the shave he'd had earlier. He sat down.
Before we left Bisbee, I made arrangements to have Watkins buried at my expense. I also sent word to Sheriff Stewart that you'd be available for questioning about the incident later, if necessary.
The sheriff's not going to be happy with me. I was supposed to attend an inquest today for those two hard cases I shot last night.
Now don't worry about that. My attorneys can smooth over any ruffled legal feathers. I don't consider myself above the law, Morgan, but I don't see anything wrong with using it to my advantage either.
You mean you take whatever advantages you can?
Of course I do. I'm a businessman. No one is successful in business without learning how to seize opportunities. Carpe diem. That means...
seize the day.
You speak Latin?
A little.
At any rate, you don't have to be concerned about Sheriff Stewart. If you go to work for me, that is. If you don't, then any legal matters would be your own responsibility, of course.
How long has it been since the outlaws hit one of your trains?
Almost 3 weeks. As I told you, I put extra guards on the trains, and word of that could have gotten to the gang.
You don't think that's going to scare them off for good?
No, I don't. In fact, it worries me that this much time has passed since the last robbery. The odds are that they won't wait much longer to strike again.
How did they stop the trains?
They piled rocks and logs on the tracks at the spot where the line comes out of the mountains. The right-of-way is narrow there, with bluffs crowding in on both sides, and the tracks curve so that southbound trains don't have a good view of the gap until they're almost on top of it.
Sounds like a spot almost tailor-made for an ambush and holdup.
Unfortunately, that's true. When my surveyors laid out the line, they concerned themselves only with engineering concerns, not on whether they were creating a bottleneck where a train could be stopped easily. No one realized the potential problem until later.
After the first robbery, I expect.
That's right.
And by then, it was too late to do anything about it.
Correct again. It would be prohibitively expensive to move the line now.
They only hit trains coming out of the mountains, bound for Bisbee from Titusville?
Of course. Those are the trains that have ore shipments on them. Northbound trains, such as this one, carry passengers and supplies, but not enough to make it worth the while of those outlaws to stop them.
So you're not worried about them stopping us on the way up there?
Not at all. But we'll be taking on an ore shipment while we're there, so there's a chance we might run into trouble on the return trip.
He sounded like he almost hoped that would be the case, Morgan thought. Sheffield probably thought there was a better chance he'd take the job if that happened. It would take about 2.5 hours to reach Titusville, Sheffield explained, and during that time, Morgan talked to the tycoon about the previous robberies, finding out everything he could about them. The bandits had worn masks, so none of the witnesses had seen their faces. Because of that, there was no proof that Colonel Gideon Black was involved in the crimes, but Sheffield was convinced that was true anyway.
I never had any trouble with holdups until Black arrived in Arizona and began gathering hard cases around him. I realize that's not enough proof for a court of law, but it's enough for me.
Enough for you to hire your own gunman.
Fighting fire with fire is a time-honored tactic.
There's been shooting during the holdups?
Yes, sad to say. Several passengers and members of the train crews have been killed when they tried to fight back. Those outlaws are merciless, Morgan. That's one more reason they have to be dealt with severely.
After seeing what had happened at the Williams Ranch, Morgan didn't have to be told how merciless the outlaws were. He had seen too much evidence of that with his own eyes, images that might haunt his brain forever. Sheffield didn't mention anything about the gang having a cannon. Morgan supposed that might be a new development. If you were trying to stop a train, especially a heavily guarded one, a big gun like that might come in really handy. A former military man like Colonel Black would know that, too. By the time the train was approaching the mountains, Sheffield had excused himself and left the parlor car. The maid brought Morgan a fresh cup of coffee, and she was followed a few minutes later by Glory Sheffield. Morgan wondered if she had been deliberately avoiding coming back there while her husband was with him. It appeared that was the case. Morgan had moved onto one of the divans, and as soon as Glory came into the car, she sat down beside him, close enough that he could feel the warmth from her hip through their clothes. A disturbing thought forced itself into his mind. How far would Sheffield go to get what he wanted? Would he actually send his wife to seduce Morgan, just to get him to agree to go after Colonel Black? Or was it all Glory's idea? She leaned even closer to him.
How are you enjoying the trip so far?
This car is very comfortable, and the coffee is good.
What about the company?
Very pleasant.
I'm glad to hear you say that.
She rested a hand on his shoulder.
It could be even more pleasant, Mr. Morgan. Or can I call you Kid? That's what Edward says you're known as. Kid Morgan. No offense, but sounds like something out of a dime novel.
She was close enough that he could feel the warmth of her breath on his cheek.
What's your real first name?
Morgan was saved from having to answer by a sudden boom that was loud enough for him to hear over the rumble of the train's wheels on the tracks. At the same time, a sharp jolt went through the car. Sharp enough so that Glory was thrown right off the divan and landed on the floor. Morgan sprang to his feet and leaped to the window as the train slowed down and came to a lurching halt. It looked like Sheffield had been wrong about them having nothing to worry about on the trip up to Titusville. Unless Morgan's hunch was wrong, the outlaw's big gun had just spoken. And the big gun down had begun. Edward Sheffield rushed into the car.
My God, what happened?
Then he spotted his wife on the floor.
Good Lord, Gloriana! Are you all right?
Out of instinct, Morgan had drawn his gun as he peered through the window. He saw that the train had reached the gap where the spur line entered the mountains. Those bluffs Sheffield had mentioned loomed closely on both sides of the tracks. Atop the bluff to the right sat the cannon that had boomed a moment earlier. Men clustered around it, reloading it. Morgan saw a man run a wet swab on a long pole down the barrel with practiced efficiency, putting out any lingering sparks from the first shot before a second charge of powder was packed into the weapon. Other men armed with rifles clustered along the bluff, taking pot shots at the train. Their intention was probably to make everyone in the cars keep their heads down until more outlaws could board the train and take it over. Morgan grimaced. He couldn't do any good with a handgun. He needed his Winchester, which was in the car with the buckskin, his saddle, and the rest of his gear.
Both of you stay here. Get behind one of the divans and keep your heads down.
What are you going to do?
I don't know yet. Something.
Does this mean you're working for me?
It means I don't like anybody shooting at me.
He strode past them toward the door at the front of the car. He stepped onto the platform as a bullet banged off of the brass fittings on the car. He quickly dropped down to the roadbed through the space between the two private cars. Morgan stretched out and wriggled onto his back underneath the train. Then he reached up, grasped the rods that ran under the cars, and began pulling himself along. He was well hidden from the outlaws up on the bluffs as he tried to reach the car where his horse was. Since Sheffield's private cars were the last two of the train, he had to make his way under the living quarters car and then the caboose. The converted baggage car where he had left the buckskin and his gear was right in front of the caboose. It wasn't that difficult pulling himself along the road there, but he lost his hat and the gravel ripped and tore at the back of his coat, gouging his flesh in places as well. It took him a few minutes to reach the front of the caboose. During that time, he heard shots continue to ring out from the bluffs. A few shots came from the train as well, as passengers and crew tried to mount a defense, but from the sound of it, the resistance was rather feeble. He couldn't get into the car from the end, so he would have to expose himself to the outlaws' fire. He pulled himself along to what he judged was the middle of the converted baggage car, as close as he could get to the sliding door on its side. Then he rolled out from underneath it and sprang to his feet, moving as fast as he could in the hope that he could get inside before any of the riflemen on the bluff noticed him. That was a futile hope. Bullets burned through the air as he reached up and grasped the edge of the door, which had been left open a few inches to let in some light and air for his horse. Morgan thrust the door back, grabbed hold, and vaulted inside. He rolled away from the opening. Surging to his feet, Morgan ran over to the stall where the buckskin tossed his head in eagerness to get out. The horse had never minded the sound of shots or the smell of powder smoke. Sometimes Morgan thought the buckskin thrived on those things.
You're better off right where you are, big fella.
Morgan pulled his Winchester from the sheath, which lay next to his saddle.
You couldn't do any good out there. There are too many of them.
The car had doors on both sides. The one on the side of the bluff where the cannon had been set up was closed. Morgan eased it open a couple of inches. Not enough for the outlaws to notice, he hoped, but enough to let him take a look at the situation. From there, he could see the cannon and the men around it. They all wore bandanas tied around the lower half of their faces, and their hats were pulled down, partially obscuring the upper half. Morgan couldn't recognize any of them, and didn't spot anyone wearing the distinctive outfit Colonel Black had sported that day at the Williams Ranch. Most of the men wore long dusters, though, that concealed their clothing, so Black could be up there. If he was, Morgan suspected he would be somewhere near that big gun. Slipping the barrel of the Winchester through the narrow gap, Morgan drew a bead on one of the outlaws standing beside the cannon. The rifle kicked against his shoulder when he squeezed the trigger. The man he had targeted jerked back, then stumbled forward and plunged off the edge of the bluff. While the wounded outlaw was falling, Morgan worked the Winchester's lever and shifted his aim as fast as he could to another member of the gang. He wanted to bring down as many of them as he could before they realized where the deadly fire was coming from. His second shot drove into the chest of another outlaw near the cannon and knocked that man out of sight. Morgan cranked off two more rounds and hit a third man before the rest of the Owl Hoot artillery crew sprang into action. Morgan's eyes widened as he saw the cannon's muzzle swing around and point toward the boxcar.
Son of a...
He leapt away from the door and threw himself into the stall with the buckskin. The cannonball smashed through the boxcar door. The ball had continued on at a downward angle and hit the boxcar floor and blasted a hole in it as well. Luckily, the devastating shot missed Morgan and the buckskin by 10 or 12 feet, but Morgan still covered his head with his arms to protect himself from flying debris. Morgan knew he couldn't stay there. The outlaws would continue to use the cannon to blast away at the boxcar, since they knew the deadliest shot on the train was in there. He had no idea how fast a real artillery crew could reload and fire a cannon like that, but he hoped the outlaws wouldn't be as efficient. He grabbed a blanket and saddle and threw them on the buckskin. Morgan was all too aware of the seconds flying past. He was in a race against time, a race to get out of the boxcar with the buckskin before another cannonball came crashing through the wall. He drew the cinches tight, slung the sheaths that held the Winchester and the Sharps onto the saddle, and then threw open the gate across the stall entrance. He slid the door on the far side of the car all the way back. Shots began to fly through the opening. Morgan ducked into the stall, grabbed the buckskin's reins, and swung up into the saddle. His boot heels dug into the horse's flanks and sent the buckskin leaping forward. He had to give the buckskin credit for not even hesitating as the open door loomed in front of him. The horse leaped through it, sailing high into the air as bullets shrilled around them. At the same instant, the cannon thundered again, and the ball crashed into the boxcar behind them. Morgan glanced back and knew that he and the buckskin had avoided death by only shavings of a second. The horse landed gracefully, running full blast. They were just outside the gap formed by the bluffs. Morgan whirled his mount and sent the buckskin racing alongside the train, close enough to the bluff so that the outlaws on the near side couldn't hit them from that angle, and the railroad cars shielded them from the riflemen on the far side of the gap. Morgan saw steam puffing from the diamond-shaped stack on the Baldwin locomotive. The engine didn't seem to be damaged, at least not that he could tell. He rode past the cab and reached the front of the locomotive. The cowcatcher was a tangled, twisted mass of metal. Morgan figured that was where the first round from the cannon had struck. But the rest of the engine appeared to be all right, and the tracks themselves looked undamaged. The engineer must have brought the train to a halt because he thought the tracks were torn up in front of it, and he feared a derailment. Morgan thought the train could still move, so he whirled the horse around and raced back to the cab. The engine still had steam up. The engineer just needed to hit the throttle.
Move the train! Move the train!
He saw a man in the cab who was crouched behind the meager protection of the cab's walls.
The engineer's dead!
Morgan grimaced and reached over to grasp an iron grab bar on the wall of the cab. He swung himself from the buckskin's back into the cab, taking the Winchester with him.
You know how to run this thing?
Morgan ducked down behind the other wall, next to the bloody body of the engineer, who had been shot through the head.
Yeah, but those sons of bitches up on the bluff will pick me off if I try to work the controls.
No, they won't, because I'll cover you. Now grab that throttle.
The man, who had to be the fireman, hesitated, but the fierce look on Morgan's face convinced him he would be in even more danger if he didn't do what he was told. As Morgan rose up at the side of the cab and started blazing away at the men on the bluff as fast as he could work the Winchester's lever, the trainman lunged to the engine's control and shoved the throttle forward. The locomotive lurched forward. Bullets whined, popped, and danced around inside the cab. The train began to pick up speed. Morgan saw the barrel of the cannon moving in an attempt to line up a shot at the engine. He sprayed lead around the big gun and forced the men working it to leap for cover. That gave the locomotive and the coal tender time to clear the gap. The nearly sheer walls on both sides of the tracks fell away. The outlaws continued shooting at the cars that rolled past, but they couldn't stop the train with rifle fire. The fireman looked back.
We're gonna make it!
Suddenly, a slug ripped through his body. He slumped against the brake lever, and once again the train began skidding to a halt. Morgan whirled away from the side of the cab and grabbed the wounded fireman, jerking him away from the brake. He released it and slammed the throttle forward again. The train hadn't come to a complete stop, making it easier to regain some speed. The engine kept going, climbing a long slope. Morgan leaned out to look ahead. The tracks ran in a straight line for a mile or more. He risked abandoning the controls to climb onto the pile of coal in the tender. From there, he could see the outlaws on the bluffs, as well as their cannon. The cannon's crew had swiveled the weapon even more, and Morgan knew they were lining up a shot. If they could blow a hole in the locomotive's boiler, they could still stop the train. The cannon fired before Morgan could do anything about it. There was nothing Morgan could do to stop the cannonball. He threw himself backward, onto the floor of the cab, as the shot fell short and hit the tender instead of the locomotive, smashing into the mound of coal and sending pieces flying everywhere. Some of the chunks pelted the cab like black rain, but the train kept moving. Morgan scrambled to his feet and checked the tracks ahead. No obstructions, no sharp turns that would require the train to slow down. He shoved the throttle forward as far as it would go. He didn't want to blow the boiler, but right now his main concern was getting the train out of range of that cannon. The big gun could throw a ball more than a mile, but its accuracy diminished with every yard between the train and the cannon. Morgan thought they were already far enough away so that it would be luck more than anything else if the next shot found its target. He heard the cannon blast and jerked his head around in time to see the puff of smoke from its muzzle. The cannonball slammed into the last car in the train. The car where he had left Edward and Glory Sheffield. Morgan's lips pulled back from his teeth in a grimace as he saw pieces of debris fly high in the air from the impact. He looked down to see the fireman struggling to get to his feet again. The man's left arm hung limp and his shoulder was covered with blood, but at least he was conscious again. Morgan reached down and grasped the man's right arm to haul him upright.
Can you handle the controls?
Yeah, I think so.
Good. I've got to go back and check on the Sheffields.
A narrow ledge ran along the side of the tender. Morgan made his way down it carefully. When he reached the first passenger car, he climbed to the top, figuring it would be quicker going that way than trying to get through what was bound to be a lot of chaos and confusion from the frightened passengers inside the car. Aware that he was making himself a target, he ran toward the rear of the train, leaping from car to car. It was dangerous, especially because the high speed was causing the train to sway a little on the tracks, but he wanted to reach the last car as quickly as he could. Atop the distant bluff, the cannon fired again, and Morgan gritted his teeth as he paused to see where the ball would land. It plowed up dirt and threw a cloud of dust in the air to the right of the train. The gunners were losing the range. Morgan started moving again. When he reached the caboose, he climbed down using the grab irons on the side of the car. As his booted feet landed on the platform at the front of the caboose, the door opened and Edward Sheffield rushed out, nearly running into Morgan. Sheffield grabbed Morgan's arm.
There you are! My God, did you see what happened? They shelled the train with a cannon!
Morgan didn't like being grabbed, but at the moment, he was more concerned with what might have happened to Glory. A jolt of relief went through him as he saw her come up behind her husband. He didn't particularly like her, but he had liked the idea of her being splattered all over that train car by a cannonball even less. He pulled his arm loose from Sheffield's grip.
I thought the two of you were still in that last car.
He gestured through the open door at the destruction. The cannonball had come through the roof of the car, leaving a gaping hole, and slammed into one of the divans, demolishing it. There was a hole in the floor, too, where the cannonball had gone on through. They were lucky it hadn't hit the wheels and derailed the car.
We just started forward to look for you.
Are you all right?
Yeah, I'm fine. Scratched up a little from crawling around under the train, that's all.
Under the train? What if it had started up again?
I'd have been out of luck.
Morgan saw that the gap was well behind them. The train was out of effective range of the cannon and well out of range of the rifles. By now, the outlaws might be mounted up and coming after them on horseback, but Morgan didn't see any dust to indicate that. More than likely, since the ambush had failed, the gang had given up on stopping the train, at least for now. The blue-uniformed conductor crowded onto the platform behind Sheffield and Glory.
Does anybody know what's going on?
Your engineer's dead. The fireman's at the controls. You better get somebody up there to shovel some coal for him. He's wounded, so he can't do that job.
The conductor jerked his head in a nod.
I'll get up there myself right now. We don't want to start losing steam. Those bushwhackers might try to come after us.
Even though their ambush failed?
They were bold enough to attack a train with a cannon. Maybe we'd better not underestimate them.
The conductor hurried off toward the front of the train.
I never heard of such a thing. It's like those outlaws are at war with the railroad.
That's one more reason I'm convinced Gideon Black is behind this. These attacks are being carried out like military operations, and he's got the knowledge to do so.
Morgan looked behind the train again and spotted the buckskin galloping after it. The horse couldn't keep up and was falling farther behind as the train continued to climb into the Dragoon Mountains. Morgan grimaced. He didn't want to lose the buckskin. The horse had been a fine saddle mount. At that moment, the train began to slow, either because the flames in the firebox had died down and it was losing steam, or because a curve was coming up. Either way, Morgan didn't care. He seized the opportunity as the train's speed fell off to a crawl.
I'll see you in Titusville.
Oh, wait a minute, where are you? Morgan!
It was too late. Morgan had already clattered down the iron steps attached to the platform on the rear of the caboose and swung off, landing in a run on the ground. His momentum kept him going for several steps before he came to a stop. Sheffield glared at him as the train continued to pull away. Glory stood beside her husband with a look of concern on her face. Morgan lifted a hand in farewell to both of them. Then he turned and saw his buckskin trotting up to him. Morgan patted the animal on the shoulder and then took hold of the reins. He couldn't ride the buckskin until the horse had had a chance to rest. He slid the Winchester back in its saddle sheath, then started walking along the tracks, leading the buckskin. Morgan hoped those outlaws weren't pursuing the train. If he had to make a run for it now, he'd be out of luck. The buckskin couldn't gallop another half mile without collapsing. Luckily, the sky remained clear of dust behind him. Once the train was out of sight, he was alone in the foothills of the Dragoons. The walk gave him some time to think. Sheffield was right. The outlaw's use of the cannon pointed straight to Colonel Gideon Black. Throw in the connection with the raid on the Williams Ranch, and that was more than enough proof for Morgan. The ex-colonel was the man he was looking for. Finding Black might not be that easy. Morgan wasn't convinced that accepting Sheffield's offer would do any good. A posse of hired guns could tramp around those mountains for weeks without finding any sign of the outlaws. It was easier to avoid a large group of men like that than it was to throw one man off the trail. The problem was, what could one man do against 24 outlaws who had gotten their hands on a cannon, for God's sake? The kid wasn't any closer to an answer to that question when he came in sight of Titusville a couple of hours later. He had walked for half an hour to let the buckskin rest, then mounted up and ridden at a slow but steady pace for another hour and a half, following the railroad tracks. That brought him to the settlement, which was tucked into a shallow valley that came to a dead end against the slope of a mountain. Part of the way up the face of that mountain, Morgan saw a number of buildings scattered around a large dark opening in the face of the earth. That would be the Gloriana Mine, he thought, the source, or rather one of the sources, of Edward Sheffield's wealth and power. The damaged train sat at the depot. The engine had been uncoupled and pulled into a roundhouse, where it was turned around and then run back out onto the siding. Men were already working on it, trying to repair the damaged cowcatcher. Morgan reined to a halt beside the locomotive.
You know where I can find Mr. Sheffield?
I expect he's down at the mining company office. That is, if he's not off somewhere chewing nails. I ain't never seen the boss so mad.
Morgan nodded his thanks. He wasn't surprised to hear that Sheffield was still upset. He rode along the street until he came to a red brick building with a sign on it, proclaiming it to be the headquarters of the Sheffield Mining Corporation. He dismounted and left the buckskin at the hitch rack in front of the building. When he went inside, he planned to ask one of the workers if Sheffield was there, but he didn't have to.
Worthless, Bateman, and that means that you're worthless to me.
Morgan headed toward that door. A man who had been sitting at one of the desks got up quickly and moved in front of him. The fellow was tall and slender in shirt sleeves, vest, and string tie.
Hold on a minute, mister. Can I help you?
I'm looking for Sheffield.
I'm afraid Mr. Sheffield is busy right now.
Morgan stepped around the man.
Sorry, I have to see him.
Wait, you can't just...
Sheffield appeared in the open door.
Morgan, I thought I heard your voice out here. I was beginning to worry that those outlaws had caught up to you.
He turned to look over his shoulder.
Step out here, Bateman. I want you to meet the only man who actually accomplished anything when those outlaws attacked the train.
A man in a brown suit followed Sheffield out of the inner office. He wore a flat-crowned brown hat, and long blonde hair fell around his shoulders. Dressed like that, with the long hair, the man bore a faint resemblance to the famous Wild Bill Hickok, and Morgan had a hunch the hombre knew that and tried to play it up to his advantage. The man also wore a pair of ivory-handled Colts, and at the moment, the anger in his eyes made it clear he would like nothing better than to pull both of those irons and fill Morgan full of lead.
I told you we'll run those bandits to ground, Mr. Sheffield, if you let us. So far, you just had us guarding the trains.
And a fine job your men did of that today.
It would have been different if I'd been there.
Sheffield looked like he didn't believe that.
This is Kid Morgan. I've asked him to take over and lead the effort to find Colonel Black and his men.
Morgan, huh?
The long-haired man gave Morgan a cool, appraising stare and clearly didn't like what he saw.
I reckon I heard of him. I reckon you probably heard of me. I'm Phil Bateman.
Nope. Can't say as I have.
A flush crept over Bateman's face as his scowl deepened. As he stepped past Sheffield, his hands hovered over the butts of his guns.
Well, maybe I ought to show you why you should have.
Damn it, Bateman, stop that! I want you and Morgan to work together, not kill each other.
I never agreed to work for you.
Now listen, if it's a matter of money...
It's not.
Morgan had made up his mind.
I just don't want the job.
He didn't bother explaining to Sheffield that his answer didn't mean he wasn't going after Colonel Black. He had his own reasons for trying to put a stop to the renegade colonel's activities. He had a score to settle for the friends he had lost, and he thought his chances of doing that would be better alone, even with the odds he'd be facing, rather than trying to deal with a stiff-necked hard case like Bateman and a bunch of other hired guns. Sheffield glared at Morgan. He was a man accustomed to getting what he wanted, and he didn't like it when anyone told him no.
Blast it, Morgan! You saw that those bastards are capable of—
That's right, I did. That's why I don't want any part of going after them.
This is the famous gunfighter you were going to hire, Mr. Sheffield? First of all, he ain't all that famous. And second, he sounds like a damn coward to me.
Morgan knew good and well that Bateman was trying to prod him into a fight. Sheffield's words had stung his pride, and Bateman intended to heal it by proving that he was faster on the draw than Kid Morgan. One advantage Morgan had was that he didn't give a damn whether he was faster than Bateman. He felt fairly confident that he was, but he didn't intend to find out. He wasn't going to risk getting killed before he could settle the score with Colonel Black for what had happened at the Williams Ranch. Sheffield glanced back and forth between the two of them. Judging by the look on his face, he was nervous about the possibility of gunplay breaking out, with him maybe caught in the middle.
What's going on here?
Her husband looked past Morgan at Glory.
Damn it, Gloriana, I told you to stay at the hotel!
I would have, but you were over here such a long time, dear.
Glory moved around the men so that she could see Morgan and Bateman, and so they could see her. She sensed the tension in the room, as did the men who'd been working at the desks. They looked almost as nervous as Sheffield. The clerk who had tried to stop Morgan from going into the inner office had backed off and now stood beside his desk, toying with the inkwell as he watched the confrontation between Morgan and Bateman. Morgan didn't take his attention off Bateman, but from the corner of his eye, he saw the way Glory's breasts began to rise and fall faster. A flush crept over her face. He realized that she was excited by the danger that was in the air. A part of her probably wanted Morgan and Bateman to slap leather. Morgan wasn't going to let that happen.
Well, Morgan, did you hear what I said?
I heard you. Think whatever you want, Bateman. It doesn't matter to me.
So you admit that you're a yellow, spineless coward?
I admit that I don't care what somebody like you thinks.
The flat, simple words were so scathing in their dismissal that once again Bateman looked like he was about to reach for his guns. If his hands moved a little more, Morgan was ready to draw. Even though his stance appeared casual, every nerve in his body was taut. He planned to kill Bateman just as quickly as he could, in hopes that the gunman wouldn't get off a shot that might hit an innocent bystander, like one of the clerks, or Glory Sheffield.
Ah, hell with it. I'm not going to waste a bullet on you, Morgan.
He moved his hands away from the ivory-handled gun butts and turned to Sheffield.
Give me the word, Mr. Sheffield, and the boys and I will go out and hunt down those outlaws for you.
All right, Bateman. I don't suppose I have any choice. Find that renegade Colonel Black.
And kill him?
Whatever it takes to make sure he leaves my trains alone.
Sheffield walked over to his wife and took hold of her arm.
We're going back to the hotel.
She pulled loose from his grip.
There's no need to manhandle me, Edward. I was hoping to look around Titusville. I haven't been here before, you know.
There's nothing to see. It's just a town.
Well, I noticed a great many saloons and similar establishments.
None of which are suitable places for you to visit.
Sheffield looked at Bateman.
What are you waiting for? There's still time enough for you to go out there where those outlaws ambushed us and try to pick up their trail.
Yes, sir. Hadn't I better leave some men here to ride guard on the train when it goes back to Bisbee?
Sheffield looked at Morgan.
Are you going back to Bisbee on the train, Morgan? It ought to be repaired and ready to roll again tomorrow.
No, I think I'll stay up here for a while. I'd sort of like to look around the town, too.
See? I'm not the only one.
She stepped over to Morgan and slid her arm around his.
Maybe we should explore Titusville together.
Morgan's jaw tightened. He hadn't expected such scandalous behavior from Glory, but maybe he should have known better, considering what he had seen of her actions so far. She clearly liked goading her husband and flirting with other men as much as she could. He thought about disengaging his arm from hers, but that might just make her more determined to get her way.
Do what you like. You always do anyway. And as long as you're with Morgan, at least I'll know that you're safe from the roughnecks around here.
He turned back to Bateman.
Yes. Leave some men to guard the train tomorrow, since Morgan won't be on it.
Yes, sir.
Bateman didn't like the implication that Morgan alone would do a better job of protecting the train than his men could. He stalked out of the office, but not before glaring one last time at Morgan. When Bateman was gone, Glory urged Morgan toward the door.
Well, come with me, kid. I want to see this place.
I still have work to do. I'll be here at the office for a while.
That's fine, dear.
The off-handed way Glory spoke made it clear she didn't care where her husband was or how he was spending his time. A little muscle jumped in Sheffield's jaw as he nodded and turned to go back into the inner office. With arms linked, Morgan and Glory left the building that housed the mining corporation.
What would you like to look at first? A saloon? A brothel?
You're trying to shock me. It's not going to work.
Are you saying that you can't be shocked, kid?
Nope.
But it would take more than me to do it. Is that right? Well, we'll see about that.
Morgan managed not to sigh in exasperation.
Let's walk over to the general store. I need a new hat.
I'd noticed that yours was gone. What happened to it?
I lost it while I was crawling around under the train. I imagine it's blowing around somewhere out there on the edge of the foothills now.
Well, I'll be glad to help you pick out another one.
He hadn't asked her to help him pick out a new hat, he thought, but he refrained from pointing that out to her. Morgan spotted a large building across the street with Titusville Mercantile painted on the sign that hung above its doors. He and Glory started toward it. Morgan was aware that a lot of men on the boardwalks and in the dusty street stared at Glory with undisguised lust. She was probably the most stunning woman who had ever set foot in the settlement. He was sure that she was aware of the attention, too, and was probably enjoying every minute of it. She could stir up a lot of trouble if she stayed in a rough-and-tumble place for very long, he thought. It would be a good idea if Sheffield got her back to Bisbee on that train tomorrow. But that was Sheffield's business, not his, Morgan told himself. They stepped onto the boardwalk and went into the mercantile. Morgan spotted several hats hung on pegs next to a window and went over to examine them. Since Glory still had her arm linked with his, she went with him. Morgan reached for a broad-brimmed brown Stetson, similar to the one he had lost under the train.
No, not that one. It doesn't go with that suit at all.
I'll probably have to get a new suit, too. That coat got pretty torn up while I was crawling around on that roadbed.
Glory picked up one of the other hats.
This is the one you need. Try it on.
Morgan turned the hat over in his hands. It was black, with a slightly smaller brim, and the band around the crown was studded with silver conchos. Holding it in one hand, he settled it on his head, then looked at Glory.
What do you think?
Oh, it's perfect. Very handsome. You should get it.
I don't know how much it costs yet.
Oh, well, you don't have to worry about that. Edward owns this store. He owns nearly all the businesses in Titusville.
That doesn't mean I don't have to pay for the hat. I turned down that job he offered me, you know.
Yes, I know. And I'm still not happy about it. I was hoping we could spend a lot more time together.
Ain't that purty?
Morgan bit back a sigh and thought, not again. He hoped he wasn't about to have to kill somebody. Morgan turned slowly. He had recognized the challenge in the man's voice and knew the comment was intended to either goad him into a fight or humiliate him. It hadn't been that long since Phil Bateman had tried the same tactic, and Morgan was getting damned sick and tired of it. Two men stood there, hard-bitten hombres with stubbled faces and gaunt cheekbones. They wore range clothes and low-slung guns. One was a few inches taller than the other and had rust-colored hair instead of dirty brown. Those were the only significant differences in their appearance. Morgan pegged them as two of the men Sheffield had hired to protect his trains, the men who would now attempt to hunt down Colonel Black's band of desperados under Bateman's leadership. It wasn't very likely they would be successful, Morgan thought. If Black and his men knew the Dragoon Mountains at all, they would be able to give Sheffield's unofficial posse the slip without much trouble.
I reckon Bateman must have sent you over here to harass me.
I'm the one talking to you, mister. Nobody else. And I say that's a mighty purty hat. Looks like something an Eastern dude would wear.
Mrs. Sheffield, why don't you go on over to the other side of the store?
You sure you want to do that, dude? Maybe the lady should stay where she is to protect you.
Yeah, I hear she's partial men who ain't her husband.
Morgan heard Glory's sharp intake of breath. She might not make any bones about the sort of woman she was, but she obviously didn't enjoy hearing two men such as these gun wolves talking about it.
You know what they call a woman like that? A slut. Pure and simple.
Then why is she hanging around with some damn Easterner who probably don't even like women? He looks like a sissy to me.
Are you going to just stand there and let them say those things about both of us, Mr. Morgan?
What do you want me to do? Shoot them?
Yes! I think I'd like that very much.
Well, that put it right out there. The two men crouched, poising their hands near their guns, and the movement reminded Morgan of coiling snakes. All they needed was the sound of rattles buzzing to warn of imminent danger. Everybody in the store knew it, too. There were quite a few customers in the place, and most of them scrambled to get somewhere that they wouldn't be in the line of fire.
How about it, mister? You gonna draw?
Hold on a minute. I wanna look at this hat. I think you may be right about it.
That surprised all of them, including Glory.
What are you doing?
Moving slowly, so as not to spook them into drawing, Morgan reached up and took off the hat. He stepped closer to the window, as if trying to get a better look at it in the light.
What the hell? Aw, crap!
The next second, the sunlight slanting in through the window struck the silver conchos on the hatband and reflected right into his eyes, momentarily blinding him. He flung up a hand to block the glare and took an instinctive step back. At the same instant, Morgan flicked his wrist and sent the hat flying into the face of the other man. Reflex made him flinch as it came straight at his eyes. Morgan kicked him in the groin. He clutched at himself as he doubled over and then collapsed on the store's floor. The man Morgan had blinded with the sun's reflection from the conchos was still weaving around like he hadn't yet regained his sight. Morgan brought his right around in a looping punch that landed cleanly on the hard case's jaw. He then brought his left hand up in an uppercut that caught the man under the chin. The man's head rocked back. The man staggered backward and fell to the floor, out cold. His companion lay nearby, curled up in a whimpering ball of pain.
My God. How did you do that? Why did you do that?
Seemed like it would be easier than shooting them, and less dangerous to everybody else in the store, too. Sorry if I disappointed you.
He bent and picked up the hat from the floor.
I think I'm starting to like this hat after all.
He put it on again, and turned to see Glory glaring at him. She hadn't liked that comment about disappointing her, he thought, but he knew it was true. She had thought that she was about to see the blood and death that had been denied to her earlier in her husband's office, and a part of her had been looking forward to it. Several of the store's customers and one of the clerks came forward tentatively to stare curiously at the men on the floor. The clerk glanced at Morgan.
I never saw anybody move so fast, mister. I think you could have beat both of them to the draw if you'd wanted to.
Didn't see any point in getting a lot of blood on the floor. You might have wound up with some bullet holes in the walls you'd have to patch.
Or bullet holes in us.
That was a risk, too. Have you got any law in this town?
Phil Bateman's the marshal.
Really?
Somehow, that didn't surprise him. Edward Sheffield pretty much owned Titusville, so it made sense that the local law would be one of Sheffield's hand-picked men. Morgan was a little surprised that the tycoon hadn't offered him the marshal's badge as well, when Sheffield was trying to hire him. Morgan pointed at the hat on his head.
How much for the hat?
There's no charge. I told you, Mr. Morgan. My husband owns this store. I'm sure he won't mind if I give you the hat.
I'd rather pay for it.
Morgan took a double eagle out of his pocket and handed it to the clerk.
Will that cover it?
Yes, sir, I reckon.
The clerk glanced nervously at Glory.
If Miss Sheffield says it's all right.
If Mr. Morgan wants to be ungracious, that's fine with me, I suppose.
I don't mean any offense. I just like to pay my own way and not be beholden to anybody.
Fine.
Morgan glanced at the doorway. Phil Bateman came into the store, his hands near the ivory-handled revolvers and a look of expectation on his face, as if he'd hoped he'd have to use the guns. He came to a stop when he saw the two men lying on the floor near Morgan and Glory, one unconscious, the other obviously not in the mood to cause any more trouble.
Somebody on the street told me there was a fight going on in here. I should have known you were involved in it, Morgan. Trouble just follows you around, don't it?
It seems to. I think you knew who was involved, all right, since you sent those two over here after me.
What the hell are you talking about?
Morgan nodded toward the two men who had picked the fight.
Are you saying that those men aren't part of the crew that Sheffield hired to guard the railroad?
I'm saying I never saw those two before in my life. I got better things to do than worry about holding a grudge against you, Morgan. If I decide to settle things between us, you can damn well be sure that I'll handle it myself. And I'll come at you from the front.
Even though Morgan had been convinced that Bateman was behind the men's attempt to pick a fight with him, Bateman's words had the ring of truth. Bateman was the sort of man who clearly rated his own prowess with a gun quite highly, and maybe his pride would stand in the way of sending anybody else after Morgan. Morgan hadn't considered that angle of it before. He decided that he believed what Bateman had just told him. He jerked his head in a curt nod.
Fine, but that leaves a question unanswered.
He gestured toward the two men.
Who are they?
A couple of hombres who just naturally don't like you? I can sure understand that feeling.
Maybe so.
Morgan didn't fully believe it, though. His gut told him there was more to it than just a couple of hard cases trying to harass a man they had pegged as an Easterner. He would have to get to the bottom of it. Otherwise, he risked having someone send more men after him.
I understand you're the local marshal, too. What are you going to do with these two?
We have a little one-cell jail. I'll deputize a couple of miners to drag them over there and throw them in it. They can cool their heels there until I get back. The Justice of the Peace can hear their case then.
Morgan knew Bateman meant until he got back from trying to track down Colonel Black's gang. That might take a while, he thought. The prisoners could be in for a long stay in jail.
What if I don't press charges against them?
Doesn't matter. They still disturbed the peace. For that matter, so did you. From the looks of it, their peace got disturbed real good.
I just defended myself and the lady.
Don't worry, I'm not going to lock you up. But I reckon it'd be a good idea if you don't linger around town, Morgan. There's nothing here for you.
Actually, Morgan agreed with him, although he wasn't going to admit that to Bateman. He intended to spend the night there in Titusville. But come morning, he was going to be on the trail of Colonel Gideon Black.